Well, silver is the most underpriced asset in the market, as far as I'm concerned. And if you look at that, it's peaked in 1980, and that's what, 44 years ago now? Well, okay, it's going to be 45 in another few days. It was $50. And it's now selling in the low 30s, around $30, 44 years later. So, and gold peaked at around 800. So, and it's at 2800. And even it hasn't adjusted for inflation. And silver hasn't adjusted for inflation at all and is even cheaper. And it's not like there's been massive, you know, if there've been massive silver finds, oh, we discovered in, you know, Mongolia, a giant silver deposit that will feed the world for generations. No such thing has happened. I mean, the mines in Peru and Mexico that the Spanish explorers found and are still in operation and still producing, I mean, these are like running out of silver. I mean, the amount of silver being used in the world is much bigger than the supply for the last 4 years, I think. And so the push will eventually come to shove and silver will skyrocket.
Daryl Montgomery, good afternoon to you and happy New Year. How are you?
Good afternoon, Andy. Thanks for having me. I'm fine.
No,
Waiting
well,
with anticipation for the new year.
yeah, me too. So I want to congratulate you. You wrote a series of really good articles on the election and really kind of projecting what that means to the country and really to the world. I want to work that a little bit more out with you in our conversation right now. And specifically, well, let's just start with that. What is that the number one thing that means to you this election? And that has cultural implications and it has big time political implications and business implications. Yeah, what's the number one thing to you?
Oh, well, there's a number of them. It's really hard to say this is number one. A realignment election means many things are changing. You
Yeah.
know, the way
Well,
this it's no longer business as usual.
yeah. You did a great job actually doing a systematic breakdown of the different realignment elections throughout history that I really appreciated. And I think this is one of those. Well, I guess maybe start with why do you think this is one of those?
Okay, there's a number of factors. Of course, the magic question. A realignment election happens in the US maybe every 30, 40, 50 years. They're not that common. And there's a number of factors. The first thing you would look for is the way either a lot of new people coming into the electorate who are voting differently from the people already there, or people who have been voting for many years one way and suddenly start switching parties. And that definitely happened in 2024. And you go back in history, and the realignments I look at are Lincoln, McKinley, FDR, Ronald Reagan, and now Trump. And the key voting change in Trump was the Hispanic vote. And for the last several elections, that's essentially been 2-1 for the Democratic candidate. And Trump got 46% instead of 33 or 32. And he won Hispanic men with 55% of the vote, an out and out major win. So, and my whole analysis, the first article in the series, and there's been four so far, and five is about to come out, and there may be 8 to 10 in the end. So, there was a shift basically of all male voters, regardless of where they were in the electorate. And it showed up most among Hispanic men. And it also showed up among Black men. It showed up among young men. So, and these were three, these are three, made the three major Democratic constituencies. So they're in trouble. They'll, you know, they've been pushing, and I made this point, you know, in 2016, the other election, you know, Trump has to be viewed as 2016, 2024. There were two female candidates for the Democrat Party. And the Democrat strategy was, oh, we'll just say vote for a woman, we'll get more female votes, more women votes, and then we'll win. It has apparently never occurred to them that strategy will lose male votes. And clearly, any cursory analysis will show they lost a lot more male votes than they gained female votes. So this is a losing strategy. But they didn't learn from 2016 and decided to take it even a step further this time. So they basically have pushed the realignment to make sure, you know, men are much more likely to be Republican. And in some cases, like non-college graduates, I mean, that majority like has reached about 40%, 39-40% margin. So, and this is astronomical.
Yeah. So I guess my next question would be, is this, in your opinion, is this the new thing? Is this here to stay? And the second question is, what exactly does this mean really in the business sense? And that's really what most of my viewers would want to know.
Well, of course, that's the business is the key question. Of course, we will only know absolutely if it's here to stay once it actually is here to stay. Now, all the evidence is that it will, for the fact that the voting groups changed. Now, my fourth article was about the economic factors related, and these are significant economic financial factors to realignment elections.
That's good.
And well, they go back to Lincoln. In the case of Lincoln and McKinley and FDR, they were major depressions. And in the old days, in the 19th century, they called them panics. So you'll see this word panic. That means depression. And there was one in 1857 before Lincoln was elected in 1860. There was one in 1893, and it went on for several years. The year doesn't mean it happened in one year. That means when it started. And 1893 before McKinley, and of course, the Great Depression before FDR was elected. Now, I make the point in my article is an economic crisis before 1930 or up to then, it was a depression, severe economic downturn. Afterwards, it's become inflation. And that's what got Ronald Reagan elected, and that's what got Trump elected. So we, in the post-World War II world, we adopted Keynesian economics everywhere in the West. And so that this is the brilliant strategy to stop recessions. And if you look, and brilliant is in quotes, so if you look at history, you'll see in the 19th century, there were a lot more recessions. They lasted a lot longer. And so this has been successful in the post-World War II, reducing the frequency and the length of recessions tremendously. Now, the price paid for that has been very, very high with inflation. And I make the case, and I point out, which I've done in all my books about inflation, of which I've written four, in the 19th century, in both the United States and in Great Britain, there was zero net inflation for a whole century. This is inconceivable for us. We cannot imagine such a thing could happen today. Now, there were periods of inflation, but they were all matched by periods of deflation, which undid them. So over a century's time, or even a little longer, there were no net changes in prices. Now, I make the case in 1950, average house in the U.S. was around $8,000, a little more, and it's now 400 and something thousand. The price has gone up approximately 50 times in 75 years. And, you know, a car was a little over 1,000, brand new car. And you can easily buy a car for $50,000 today or a lot more. So you can make the case that went up 50 times, not 50%, 50 times. This is a measure, a hint of how much inflation we have imposed to get rid of these recessions or minimize them. And eventually that's going to explode. So Trump is moving into, Trump has gotten a very bad hand of cards that he's, you know, or deal he's walking into, really, really bad. Because the Biden administration raised the national debt enormously. And we were in a inflation doom loop. We've got to cut spending tremendously, or, you know, inflation will just move into hyperinflation. Now, that may take decades. It's not going to happen in one year. So people say, oh, you predicted hyperinflation then last week and it didn't happen this week. These are long-term projections. Now, hyperinflation is death to an economy, complete collapse. It happened in Germany in the 1920s. This is the one case of an industrial country with hyperinflation. There are many, many, many other cases, however. But your economy totally collapses and dissolves completely when it happens.
Yeah, I want to pull on a couple of things that you said there. And then it's actually, well, how do I say this? I consider myself informed, if you would, about economics and business. And I've never heard, and I believe in you, which is just shocking to me, that there was no net inflation in the previous century. That is just so surprising. And I paraphrase what you said. But that's number one. And then number two, how destructive it sounds like if you have the two, if you're going to pick the two, you would pick deflation as opposed to inflation. Would that be correct? And that's very Austrian, if I might say.
Well, the whole idea, well, first of all, people are totally shocked that we can live in a world. If you were born post-World War II, which I wasn't, you certainly were, and probably almost all the listeners in this podcast. We lived in this world of permanent inflation, so we can't imagine a world without inflation. There was inflation in the 19th century. There were pockets of major inflation, but they were always balanced by pockets of deflation. Now, when Keynes came along just before World War II, he said, oh, here's my great new strategy. You know, when the economy goes down, the government will spend more money and increase spending and increase liquidity, and that will rev up the economy and prevent recessions. So he was like, correct, that does indeed happen. But when the economy is doing well, you've got to reduce government spending and take away liquidity. And I made a point in my article, the governments quickly forgot part two. Part one we like, well, you know, if you don't do part two, it's over. You'll have a permanent inflation that spikes and eventually gets out of control. And this happened in the 1970s. If Paul Volcker had not come along and raised interest rates to over 20%, I think the Fed funds rates, we could have easily moved into hyperinflation. He is a real unsung hero for what he
did. I agree.
Now, what was the second question? That's the 19th century.
Second question is, well, okay, so it sounds very Austrian. It's just like,
oh, Austrian. Okay, sure.
There's a preference of having deflation, and if that's what you're saying, to inflation, meaning periods of deflation. I think that's what you're saying, and I would absolutely agree with you, because that's when everything resets. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, yes. But the people don't like suffering. So, you know, a recession or depression is suffering in the immediate term. Inflation is suffering in the future. And if you give human beings a choice, you want to suffer right now or suffer in the future, they'll almost all say, oh, I'll suffer in the future. I don't want to suffer right now. So politicians know this and they respond to the public and the public says, oh, that's great. And so, you know, until it all blows up in the end, which it eventually will. And, you know, it started in the 1970s. Now, I'm sure some of your viewers aren't old enough to even remember the 1970s. You know, prices, according to Keynesian theory, you could not have a deep recession and inflation. And 1973, 74 in the United States was the worst recession since the Great Depression. And inflation went up several times. You know, so there was huge inflation while there was a severe depression. And this, you know, made Keynesian theories, you know, questionable, like, hey, this theory's not working, what's wrong? And people just decided to forget it. Like, after it was over, well, we'll make believe it didn't exist. We'll go on our merry way.
So let's project that out. And you made a comment where that Trump is going to have a lot of challenges here in his economy. And one of them, from what I understand, you're saying is going to be a inflationary pressure. But yet it seems like the business cycle is rolling over, if you would. Work that out for me.
Oh, I think it's really, I think it's very, very long in the tooth, you know. It's, and it's been look at the amount of money the Biden administration, and not just him, but the UK and the EU, you know, the rest of the world too, have pumped into the financial system. You can, there is a trade-off between inflation and recession. The more inflation you are willing to have, the less recessionary your economy will be. So I'm looking at the government spending their $2 trillion deficits year after year under Biden. These are massive deficits. Now, when I was running an investment group in New York in 2008, 2009, you know, we commented that the national debt hit $9 trillion then. And we were horrified. And that was $36 trillion, right? So this is 15 years ago. Like, this is the end of the world. This cannot go on. And I said, this is going to end really badly. It's going to get totally out of control. And this is the seeds have been planted, and this is where we're headed. But people are horrified at a $9 trillion national debt. And it's $36 trillion right now and going straight up. So, you know, this is inflationary. You cannot have like infinite debt and no inflation. It just doesn't work out though.
Yeah, inflation because you have to pay off the debt. Correct. You have to print money to pay off the debt.
Well, you devalue your debt to potentially nothing if you have hyperinflation. Say, here's like $1 billion. I'll get the wheelbarrow out. We'll put $1 trillion in the wheelbarrow. Here it is. And, you know, I won't buy a cup of coffee with it today. I'll give you $1 trillion. That's what happened in Germany in the 1920s.
Yeah. So as best as you can, then. And I say this because it's the timing's great for me, because I'm working on a letter to my investors in my fund, what I expect 25 to look like. And yeah, that's a fool's game trying to project or make predictions what's going to happen a year out, but I'm going to try. What does that really mean, what we're saying here? Again, for the first year or two of the Trump administration, are we going to see a slowing down in the economy because of the debt, and potentially the Fed won't be raising or lowering interest rates? Or are we going to see much the same as we did in the last couple of years, which is a slowing economy and high inflation and high prices?
Well, we have to go back to, like, is the government telling the truth about the economy? And the answer is no. And I've written about this for years. And I specifically wrote about it in the inflation rate. And, you know, there were these big reforms and giant quotes in the 1990s that recalculated inflation. And of course, all of them led to much lower rates. All the reforms led to lower rates of inflation. None of them led to higher rates, shockingly. Right. So this is when the big scam came in. So if you underestimate inflation, which we've done a lot for 30 something years. And we started that actually back in the 80s, even before this. You overestimate GDP and how good the economy is. And if you look at the jobs figures, they have been redone to be lower levels. There was a whole year from March of this year to March of last year, and we're still in 2024, people. That, you know, they revised all of the months down. And if you look, they even revised them down before that. And so this is like well over a year. And then afterwards, they revised them down. So they've overestimated the jobs numbers month after month after month after month after month. Now, I have a degree in statistics. The moment you see there's an error, you readjust your model. For some reason, they've seen the errors for, you know, approximately 2 years now. And, well, what can we do about it? Well, you know, who did they hire to do these numbers?
Yeah.
People that make false numbers. So, like, the economy is much worse than we think. And if you look at the surveys for the national election, you know, people say, the economy is not that great. And then the Biden-Harris campaign was like, we have the greatest economy ever. People just don't know what's going on. You know, no, if the average person thinks the economy is in bad shape, it's in bad shape. And the government is lying. It's not like the government is telling the truth and the public doesn't know what's going on in their own lives. So
Yeah, and that could be part of the story why the Biden administration got voted out. I think that's a big part
Oh,
of it.
yes. Oh, certainly. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so I will remember watching, if this is an old video of you at your New York Investment Club or a men's group or women's group,
No, it was for everyone was 11. Adults were 11.
adult group. This was 15 plus years ago. This was in 2006 or 2007. And you were commenting on just the
Almost
pivot of
20
gold.
years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. The movement of gold that I thought was very interesting. And now fast forward today into 2025. And I want to say gold was just around, it must have been less than 1,000.
Yes, it was. It was. It probably was. I guess this is. There was a gold was around 800 or going to 800 around that time, and it was debate about whether or not it would get to 800. What is it today?
Exactly.
2600, and it's been
And
2800.
change. Yeah. And
Yeah,
change.
and
So,
going up. So.
and I was looking at a chart actually earlier today on the price of gold. It was since 1990. And you saw this nice curve, if you would. And then about that time when you were talking, the curve steepened. So what is your, my question is what is your expectation now with the price of gold and really precious metals? I'll throw silver and platinum in there.
Yeah, well, silver is the most underpriced asset in the market, as far as I'm concerned. And if you look at that, it's peak in 1980, and that's what, 44 years ago now? Well, okay, it's going to be 45 in another few days. It was $50. And it's now selling in the low 30s, around $30, 44 years later. So, and gold peaked at around 800, so, and it's at 2800, and even it hasn't adjusted for inflation. And silver hasn't adjusted for inflation at all and is even cheaper. And it's not like there's been massive, if there've been massive silver finds, oh, we discovered in, Mongolia a giant silver deposit that will feed the world for generations. No such thing has happened. I mean, the mines in Peru and Mexico that the Spanish explorers found and are still in operation and still producing, I mean, these are like running out of silver. I mean, the amount of silver being used in the world is much bigger than the supply for the last 4 years, I think. And so the push will eventually come to shove and silver will skyrocket. And, gold has been underpriced. And there's, I mean, you could do a long, long show on silver alone of all the machinations that go on in that market. So these are inflationary metals too. They should respond to inflation. And, we are in an inflation period, and they've not adequately. Silver certainly hasn't responded at all to inflation. It's as if we had massive deflation in that period, which we did not.
So despite this run that we've had in gold really for the past 20, 25 years, you'd still be very, very conscientious or bullish, if you would, on gold. Just because of the inflationary environment that we're in, correct?
Yeah, and technically, I don't know how technical your audience is, but commodities in general are very, very underpriced. And stocks, especially tech stocks, are extremely overpriced, especially the Mag 7 particularly. This picture existed in 1999 also and 2000. Oil bottomed at $10 in 1998. Gold did a double bottom around $250 in 1999 and 2001,
I
and then
remember.
went into a 10-year rally period. So, and at that point, the internet stocks went to the moon, just like the Mag 7 today. And some of them don't exist anymore that, people were paying astronomical sums for. So there was a big collapse in tech stock valuations for 2.5 years. And that's when the commodity rally started that lasted 10 years. And oil went from 10 to it bottomed a little early. It went to $147 and it peaked in 2008. And gold and silver lasted to 2011. So the commodities don't, I've written four books basically about this subject. And you know, because they're all on inflation investing, and I even traced the valuations of gold and silver to the 1700s or even before that. So, you know, these are long price movements. And if your audience or your investors are technical, gold made what you would call a cup in about a 13 between 2011, 2024, a cup and a handle. And the handle is a very complex. It's not a simple handle. It's I think it's like a W-shaped bottom or something like that in the handle. So this is a massive, massive multi-year handle. And that's good for at least a 10-year rally, maybe longer.
That means my ears, Daryl.
Well, excellent. Daryl, and I want to talk to you afterwards about something, but it's a fascinating subject. It seems like we're on the precipice of something. That's what it seems. I think your article really hits it on the head, and I'll include this in all the show notes, just that this was a realignment. And I think that's really the best way to say it. And then, yeah, now we're just going to see what exactly does that mean. Any final thoughts here for any of our listeners and viewers?
Well, I'm going to turn these articles eventually into a book. I'm going to expand them because they should be limited to 1,500 words, and they've drifted to 2,000, 2,500, and there should be 8 or 10. And this is just the lead up. I mean, there's you know, 2.0 or part two is what does Trump do? And what Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are talking about, this is revolutionary. You know, it's as revolutionary as FDR in the 30s. Our entire welfare state was created under FDR in a series of about 10 years. And it was some of it was very small in the beginning. And then politicians got a hold of it in each election. Oh, let's do more, let's do more, let's do more. So we've gotten to this, you know, regulation nightmare and this massive, massive bureaucracy. And you can look at Milei and Argentina, the president, who, and he fired 70,000 government workers in one day. He said, this is a massive, useless bureaucracy. And Argentina's had 9 defaults since the 19th century, 9 international financial defaults. So this country is a mess. And there's Walkins, and we just got to, like, get rid of all of the dead weight in this. And Elon Musk and Ramaswamy are sort of, look like they're going to follow that model.
So I really am very curious and interested in working that out for you. And that's another show, and working that out, exactly that. What are they going to do? And what is he going to do? And is this have standing power? Or does this really have legs? God help us. I mean, I really hope so. But
there'll be opposition. You have to go back to FDR just didn't walk in. Now, he had a supermajority in the House of Representatives, not a majority, a supermajority. So, and in the Senate, he eventually had one too. It took another 2-4 years. And so he had a lot to work with, and he had massive opposition to institutional progress. There always will be massive opposition. And I'd like to point out one other thing. One common thing about realignment presidents is assassination attempts. Lincoln was assassinated. McKinley was assassinated. There was an attempt to assassinate FDR, but they got the mayor of Chicago because the gunman wasn't didn't have good aim. And then, of course, Trump was Reagan was attempted to be assassinated and fortunately lived. And then the Trump assassination right before the election. And then it was a second attempt even before the election. So this theme, this is another supporting theme. There were like maybe a dozen or two dozen things you can look at that just happen over and over and over again. And opposition to change is one of the common reactions to this, because the deep state of the time, whatever the deep state was, doesn't like with the changes the
change
made, because they've been like feeding at the trough, and like someone's taking the slop away from them.
Right. Well, by the way, so I will link to all of the articles in the show notes below this in the podcast and on the YouTube channel. I just immensely enjoyed the read. I've read 2 of them, and this is with the highest amount of respect. It was an easy read. I mean, very intellectual, but it was an easy read. I went through it. I read them twice, and absorbed a lot of information in there. But very good read. Yeah, I'd like to have you on again to explore again what exactly is the implementation, how is this is going to work. We'll see.
There'll be a lot to talk about. And it's not going to be over in a month or 2 months.
All right. Darryl Montgomery, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Okay, thank you. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, too.